Hello, I'm Helen Boucher from Tufts University and Tufts University School of Medicine, and I'm happy to talk a little bit about how to prepare for both the initial certification and the longitudinal knowledge assessment maintenance of certification exams. So my disclosures are shown here. None are particularly relevant to this talk. First and foremost, preparing for this exam really will help you to spend a little bit of time on the ABIM website. So these are two links that'll be helpful. One is to the blueprint, which talks about the questions and the makeup of the test, how many questions in what topic areas. And then the second one gets into how the media and the pictures and such work. In terms of the exams, there's sort of two buckets. There's the initial certification exam that many of you are preparing for right after fellowship. And then there's maintenance of certification. And that comes in two flavors now. And every two-year exam is offered once a year in the fall. This year, it'll be October 15th. And you can see I included the date for next year as well. And then the longitudinal knowledge assessment, or LKA, which began in 2023 and is a series of questions that you take every 90 days. I've done both, and I'll talk about each. The certification exams are one-day exams on a computer in a test center that you sign up to go and visit, hopefully near your home. These are all multiple choice, single best answer questions, and every question has only one answer, and it should be the best answer. For initial certification, you have 4 2-hour sessions, which have up to 60 questions each for a total of 240. The system keeps the time remaining for each session on your computer screen, and you get a reminder when there's 5 minutes left. They do provide an optional tutorial with instructions and test breaks, and I recommend that you take those breaks, and we'll come back to that. For the maintenance of certification exam, we used to call it recertification. That's 4 2-hour exam sessions, up to 220 questions, takes about 10 hours all in. The maintenance of certification is open book with up-to-date that's allowed, and it's the up-to-date that the test center provides that you can use. A little bit about longitudinal assessment. This is a rolling recertification that happens in five-year periods. Get 30 questions every 3 months. You can answer them all at once or over time at your leisure. They are open book. You have 4 minutes per question. And after you answer the question, they give you the answer and a rationale for why that answer was the right answer. You need to answer 100 questions a year out of the possible 120. You get MOC credit for doing it. And they measure your adherence by making sure that in 5 years, you've answered at least 500 questions. And you get notified of pass fail at intervals along the way. You have to have answered enough questions before they can tell you if you're passing or not. In total, that 500 questions fulfills 100 MOC points, which is great. And as of today, almost 2,500 ID physicians are enrolled in this program across the country. This is just telling you how the quarters break down, basically January, April, and July, as well as October through December. And one thing I'll tell you from experience is it's really good to start early, because the deadlines creep up on you. And I just had March 31st creep up on me. You don't want to have that happen. This is what the dashboard looks like to tell you how you're doing with your progress in the longitudinal assessment. You can see that it shows where you are in the cycle there on the left with the overall progress of how many questions out of a total of 600 you've done, how many you've done this quarter, then in the second box, what is available to you this week, and then some resources on the left in terms of the time bank. You can have questions, time left for extra questions. And then they call this Life Happens, where you can skip up to 100 questions over 5 years, like if you're busy and you can't get to it. But keep an eye on that, because it's very easy to run out of those 100 questions. So in terms of the exam, a couple of things to be mindful of. You can change your answers on the questions until the section is over. So it's a good idea to note questions that you're unsure of and review them at the end. But I recommend putting an answer so that you don't end up with no answer. About 20% of the questions don't count. These are questions that are pre-questions. They're being pre-tested to see if they're strong enough to be able to be counted on a high-stakes exam like this. So if a question doesn't seem right, it may be a pre-test question. So don't get caught up on any one question. You have about 2 minutes per question on the, this is on the in the test center exams again. Unanswered questions are marked wrong, so go ahead and guess. If you don't know, the worst thing to do is leave an unanswered question. Very important to read the whole question. And again, as I mentioned before, if something seems funny, it's ambiguous, looks like there's two correct answers, you might be right, and this may be a pretest question. So my advice is give your best answer and don't sweat it. Just keep moving. When you go to the test center, there are breaks. They're optional, but I recommend taking them. It's a long day. You'll be there for up to 10 hours. They give you a total of 3 breaks that add up to 100 minutes. And you get 1 break after each of your first 3 test sessions. Again, you can use a little or all of the time. And they just subtract however much time you take from your total time. So if you take 10 minutes after your first session, then you have 90 minutes left. The other thing I'll mention is that there is a proctor monitoring the entire test space. That includes the room where you sit for the test, the locker rooms, and the reception areas. So just be prepared for that because it can feel a little uncomfortable. You will receive an email that tells you when your appointment is, where you're going, and give you some driving direction to the test center. I recommend if you don't know where the test center is, go check it out beforehand. See where it is, where you park, where you might eat. Get there half an hour early. Each center is kind of looks the same. They have between 8 and 25 workstations. I mentioned there's an administrator present. At the start of the exam, they'll take you through. There's like a little online initiation where you get instructions about how to take the exam. You're asked to agree to a pledge of honesty. When you show up, you'll need 2 personal forms of identification. That would be like a driver's license, a passport. They both have to be government issued with a signature. And then you have to have another form of ID, which could be a credit card, social security card, an ATM card, something like that. Make sure your ID is not expired because they'll be sticklers about that. And then there's more. They give you security wanding. They make you get a picture taken, additional security measures. And I'll just point out that these test centers are used for everything. The bar exam, pre-law, all kinds of other students will be there taking exams with you. So I mentioned there'll be a short orientation and you'll go to your computer workstation. You can ask for left-handed mouse if you need it. They can adjust the computer for you to be more comfortable in terms of the contrast and the height. They give you little notepads to work with. And there's also a little pop-up box on the actual computer where you can save notes. You can request headphones or earplugs. You're not allowed to bring your own. And if you have a problem, you're asked to raise your hand, not get up. And they will check you security-wise each time you leave the room and come back in. So allow some time to check back in. ABIM does comply with the Americans with Disability Act. So they'll make reasonable modifications as necessary. And you need to seek out those accommodations when you apply for the exam. And there's more information on the website for this. In terms of, you know, what's allowed and what's not allowed, they give you a locker at the test center. You're not allowed to bring in anything like a cell phone or a pager. You're not allowed to bring in a calculator or watch. There's a clock in the room. There's a calculator you can use in the test. You're really not allowed to bring much. You're not even allowed to wear a jacket. You can bring a small sweater. And like I said, they give you a little notebook thing you can take notes on, but you can't bring your own. If you have medications, you need to get prior approval for those. And I would definitely recommend bringing snacks and lunch that you leave in your locker to eat during your breaks. So if you have questions about exam day, this is the email and the phone number and the hours for ABIM. And they do update this website quite frequently. So I just checked it prior to recording this, and I just recommend that you keep an eye on it as you prepare for your exam. The tutorial. They'll give you examples of the exam questions on this tutorial, and here's the website. I definitely recommend trying it. It shows you what the feel is like of the environment, how the pictures and such work, and gives you just a little feeling for what it'll feel like on test day. The format I mentioned earlier is multiple choice questions. There's a single best answer. Most of them are clinical scenarios, and they ask about what's being done, a test, how would you make a diagnosis, what would be the next best thing to do, would you order a CAT scan, would you give a drug, and if so, which one, what is the risk, what's the prognosis, and in some cases, they ask you to apply epidemiologic principles. So you have to both know the medical knowledge and know how to apply it to patient care. 75% of the questions are patient cases, and they're really not trying to trick us. They give us normal lab values. It's less and less likely that you'll see a pediatric question, and there's very little basic science, not even much in the way of mechanisms of resistance. It might be included and could be a clue, but you won't be required to understand the genetics of every resistance mechanism, for example. There's not a lot of clinical microbiology, but sometimes they give it to you as a clue. For example, oil on media for lipophilic yeast or iron in 30-degree incubation for M. haemophilum as an example. So these questions would be analyzable without knowing the microbiology, but if you know it, it can help you. The contents of the exam are determined by a blueprint, and the blueprint is different for initial certification and maintenance of certification. The idea is that your fund of knowledge will be the largest for your initial certification, whereas at MOC, they expect us to be really good at the most common infectious disease problems like Staph aureus, using antibiotics, et cetera. And the categories are here. So you can see this is the blueprint from 2019. And as you might expect, the vast majority of the questions, 27%, are in bacterial diseases, followed by HIV, antimicrobial therapy, and then all the other topics that you see here. One thing I want to point out is that 18% of the exam is a combination of general medicine, critical care, and surgery. That's not insubstantial, and I think that's based on the fact that in infectious disease, we do such a broad range of different types of medicine. A lot of these questions will be so-called mimickers, things like temporal arteritis, sepsis, things that we need to know to be good ID doctors. And this is an area that's worth spending a little bit of time on, in my opinion. The clinical syndromes covered are shown here. I'm not going to read them all to you, but not a big surprise, right? A lot of pulmonary infections, HIV and AIDS, cardiovascular, and on, skin and soft tissue, bone and joint. Continuing here, prosthetic devices, trauma, urinary tract infections, no surprises really in what they're looking for us to be expert in, managing fever of infectious and non-infectious etiologies, for example. In terms of patient populations, the populations most at risk for infections, things like immunocompromised people, persons with HIV AIDS, pregnant women with infections, travelers and immigrants with infections. I'm not going to go through the whole list, but I would recommend you spend a few minutes looking at the list. And here's just an example, right? There's a drill down. So in the blueprint, rickettsia make up 2.5% of the questions. That's not a lot. And it includes all the rickettsia shown here. So you have to decide how much you want to focus on rickettsia. And one example I would say is that probably for both the first initial certification in MOC, you have to know Rocky Mountain spotted fever, right? Every infectious disease doctor should know about it, know who's at risk for it, and not miss it, right? But some of the more esoteric types of rickettsia you might not see as frequently on the MOC. Another kind of guiding principle to remember is that it takes years for a new question to appear on the exam and to so-called count. So if something just popped up in the last 2 years, you're less likely to see it be on your exam and to count. So, something like the bird flu or, an emerging disease that is hot in the news right now that was just in the MMWR, like the most recent hantavirus outbreak, may not be on the exam and counting this fall, right? There might be the old kind of hantavirus from New Mexico, but the new things take a little longer. And then there are things that were hot and are now not, and those will not likely be on the exam. Anthrax, for example. The test writing committee does a lot of work to avoid so-called lookup questions, right? So they don't expect us to know the treatment for filariasis off the top of our head, but they do expect us to know something about the treatment of malaria, at least the big, broad concepts that matter. And I think that's a guiding principle to keep in mind. The really good news is that most people do really well, right? We're infectious disease doctors, we're detail-oriented, and we do well on these knowledge exams. This is a look at the pass rates for initial certification going back to 2011. And what you can see is a pretty good message, right? That with very little exception, the pass rates for the first-time test takers are above 90%. In the last 3 years, 93 to 96%. So that's, I hope, reassuring to you. So let's talk about MOC a little bit more. I mentioned that there is a concerted effort in the blueprint to test what the practicing infectious disease physician should know in MOC, right? Somebody who's 10 years plus out is not expected to know every detail of the pathophysiology of Listeria, but they are expected to know everything about Staph aureus, as you can see in the green checks here. So at this link on the website, you can see the difference between initial certification and MOC. And so this is a look at MOC and the knowledge check-in and what is deemed high importance, median importance, and low importance. So Staph, strep, high importance. Pathophysiology and basic science of Carinobacteria and Bacillus, low importance, right? And then quite a bit in between in the yellow there. So how do people do on the MOC? Again, quite well. Pass rates largely above 90%. I will point out that we don't have the pass rates from 24 and 25 yet. I just checked. But back in 23, it was 92. The year before that, 95%. So pretty good. And you'll see the numbers of people taking the MOC exam is a little bit less than the number taking the initial certification, and with a lot doing the longitudinal assessment now. If you're preparing for the exam, and I am, what I hope will be my last 10-year exam, start early. Make notes. You know, during this course is a great time to sort of make a couple pages of notes of those things you want to study towards the last minute. Everything in this board review course is great preparation. The questions, the images, really helpful. Go to the website for ABIM, take the tutorial, read about the exam day, take a half an hour to do that. It'll make you feel more comfortable in that environment. Spend a little time with the blueprint and decide what you want to study, what you want to let go. I like the idea of sort of making a little binder of things that are key from the handouts from this course and from other work that you can sort of look at in a few days before the exam. With that, I'll say thank you so much. Wish you good luck. And thanks so much for joining us at the course.